Good evening, folks. This is Attorney Mark Thompson. This is the Paul Revere Show. We are here at WAUK 540 AM, 101.92.7 FM every Monday night from 7 to 8. It is another beautiful summer night, this August 22nd, 2022. We are just a few days away from the November 8th, 2022 election. And as you all know, that we've been really paying attention to democracy in Wisconsin, the state of democracy in the state of Wisconsin. And I'm honored and privileged to have tonight Nate Jarowski, who is, from my vantage point, a young lawyer who is challenging the Republican in the 21st Assembly District. Good evening, Nate. How are you?
I'm doing well, Mark. Thank you for having me.
So before we jump in terms of who you are and what's going on, let's just start, though, at the outset. What is the 21st District? What is that audience in particular? Who are your voters?
Yeah. 21st Assembly District, that's South Milwaukee, Oak Creek, part of Franklin. The part of Franklin that we're talking about is the southeastern portion. So think about starting at the county line, going up to Oakwood, all the way up to 92nd. And then it kind of tears up a little bit from there. A little bit of swath. We picked up a little bit of territory after the maps were redrawn this last go around, but not much.
So, folks, this is really, really crucial in terms of democracy in Wisconsin. The Assembly, there are 99 members of the Assembly. It has been gerrymandered to make it very, very difficult for Democrats to have a real voice, and it is, in that sense, a real, real challenge to go run for office, knowing that you're going to end up not being in the majority, even if you win. So with that as a background, who is Nate?
All right. Well, Nate, here's my little punchline. Nate's a hardworking blue-collar guy, a family man, father of three, who's just sick and tired. Just sick and tired of the way the system is right now and wanting to do something about it. And running for office is my form of activism. Getting into my background, my history.
Let's start where you were born and what's your sort of the road? The journey look like?
You know, talking about being a Wisconsin kid, right? No, I was born in La Crosse, Wisconsin. For those that don't know, western part of the state. Was raised in Whitehall, Wisconsin, which is about half hour up the road from La Crosse, and just south of Eau Claire. Cooley region, blue collar family. My father was in construction. My mom, she was a hard worker as well. She retired. And then my stepdad, he's a welder. So growing up with those roots, and just having an appreciation that, you work for it, you work hard, and that's kind of my background there. But Whitehall, Wisconsin, Whitehall Memorial High School. After that, went to UW Eau Claire, where I met my wife, and then just traveled with her for a little bit. We went to Southern Illinois University, and where she got her master's, and then somewhere along the line, obviously proposed to her and. Got married, went up, I went to law school. But the interesting story for me of why I went to law school in the first place, and this is kind of the birth of my activism, I would say, is when we went to Southern Illinois University, SIU, things kind of slowed down because you're no longer in school. You're no longer in the running around with your friends or, working 30 hours on the side as well as going to classes, those kinds of things. So things slowed down. So for me, and I didn't have my friend network there, I started to read a lot. Actually had a job where I worked for Hertz Rent-A-Car, so it was kind of a twofold education for myself. If we had somebody come in, and there were very, very infrequently, we had people renting cars there, we'd go clean up the car quick. And in the bay where we cleaned up the cars was talk radio. And the only talk radio down in Southern Illinois was conservative talk radio. So I got an earful of Hannity, I got an earful of Rush, and I'm just like, this can't be how the world is. So at the same time, like I said, I got to sit a lot at work and read, And just, I don't even know where it started, but I picked up The Economist. And I would read that sucker cover to cover, got a subscription, and was just amazed at what was going on in the world. You know, I tell you, I'm from, the western part of Wisconsin, blue collar community, farming community. And, kind of a closed in worldview. Love my family, love, you know, everybody out there. But you don't get perspectives from all over the world, let alone all over the U.S. or all over the state. So seeing those things, just how, you know, as human beings, we could allow a lot of exploitation just occur throughout the world. And then also starting to pay attention to what's going on in the U.S. as well. And I said to myself, you know what, something just lit inside of me that I wanted to do something. I wanted, again, get back to the activist, but I wanted to take action. But not having that set network or that social capital of individuals who, you know, might have gone out and protest. And this is actually before a lot of the social movements we've been seeing as of late, but just didn't have anybody that was, you know, that could be that mentor or that I could tap into. But I did have friends that were going to law school. So I'm like, okay, well, let's parlay this into what would I like to do before I die. And I know I'm kind of taking a side tangent, but that does factor in. And one of the things that came up was law school. You know, I'm like, I want to be able to challenge myself and look back and say that I did challenge myself to the nth. So combining that, I went to law school with the desire of becoming a public defender. And then on the back end, you know, looking at justice through the lens of equity, got out of law school, got with a public defender's office down in Walworth County. And, honestly, here in Wisconsin, just got burnt out by the system a little bit. The nature in which individuals were being sentenced as compared to, I went to law school in William Mitchell College of Law in the Twin Cities, St. Paul. And while I was there, again, little side tangent, so I apologize. Please stay with me. When I was in law school, I got an internship with the Department of Corrections in their restorative justice department. So this is, 15, 16 years ago, and I am literally in the Department of Corrections in Minnesota in the restorative justice department. And so it was just an interesting eye-opening perspective on looking at all stakeholders involved in harm, but in that setting, a criminal act. You have not only the victim and the state, but you have, also the perpetrator, but everybody coming together for like a healing process. So it was an interesting perspective, right? But that was my lens coming out of law school. I come to Wisconsin.
So let's put some
little pins. Yep.
If I was listening, I heard that you fell in love and you were in Eau Claire, right? And you're married, right?
Yep. Married to my wife, yeah.
And you got three kids, right?
Yep.
10, 7, 5.
Yep.
All girls. Okay, so when did you get married relative going to law school?
Sure. So it was actually in that transition point. So 2006.
Right when you're in law school.
Yep, just the summer before I started.
And then what leads you to come back to Wisconsin?
Well, the trade-off for my wife and I was, okay, I get to pick the law school I want to go to. And, we're in the Twin Cities, got friends and family up there with the idea of coming back to Wisconsin and actually coming back closer to her family when it was time to start having a family. So I knew after law school that I was going to be coming back to Wisconsin, primarily just wanted to be, like I said, in proximity to her folks.
And so her folks are?
Cudahy.
Okay, Cudahy. Yeah. So you're coming to the Milwaukee area, specifically Cudahy. So you said you worked with a public defender in Walworth County. How long did you do that?
21 months. Yep, 21 months.
So almost 2 years.
Right.
And when did you transition out of being a public defender?
I want to say January 2020. I'm sorry, January 2011.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so then what have you been focusing on from 2011 to today?
Primarily when I left the public defender's office, it was focused on trial litigation. So I took those skills and never really found a home or fell in love with any specific area. So was still looking at other opportunities that would come along. And Associated General Contractors of Greater Milwaukee came along in 2015. They needed an in-house counsel, corp counsel, to help negotiate their contracts, help with labor relations, sit on some of the funds. They have a multi-billion dollar pension fund. So I went with AGC, Associated General Contractors, in 2015, was there for 4 years, built some really great relationships working across the table with labor, carpenters, operating engineers, met masons, bricklayers. There's going to be a few in there that I'm going to leave out, which I apologize for, but really built some good relationships with them when I was there. And then the opportunity came along to be an executive director for Building Advantage, which is a union-friendly organization promoting union construction, and was there for a few years. And then, wanted to get back into the practice and actually help people one-on-one and directly, and that's where I am now.
When did you open your solo practice?
It would have been December, well, it's last December, yeah.
And that whole transition, you live in South Milwaukee, right?
Correct.
In the middle of the 21st Assembly District. So how long have you been living in South Milwaukee?
Since 2014.
So you have, all three children in school there?
Yes, we do, right? Yeah.
Public schools?
Public schools. Proudly in the public school system. That was one of the big reasons why we chose South Milwaukee. A couple of things. So being close to her family, again, my wife, the trade offer was, okay, we're going to be close to your folks, but Nate gets to pick where we live. And just taking a look at some of the suburbs, kind of around Cudahy, for me, it needed to be accessible for the running trails, the park system. I'm selfish, right? I'm an avid runner. So check that box. And just needed to feel like home, had to have great schools, low crime rate, and it was just check, check, check all the way for me on South Milwaukee. We chose to live there.
You said you're an avid runner. What does that mean?
Non-campaign time. Yeah, non-campaign time, we're talking 40 to 50 miles a week. It's probably a marathon or two a year. And just before I started doing this, I actually got into ultramarathoning. Did 100 milers last year.
So now that you are doing doors and introducing yourself to the voters, what has that done to your running game?
Well, I still get my cardio in, but not quite at the pace that I was before.
All right, folks, you just met Nate Jarowski. The Democratic Party candidate for the 21st District. We'll be back on the break on the other side with Nate and why he's running. This is Attorney Mark Thompson. This is the Paul Revere Show. I am here tonight with Nate Jarowski, the candidate for the 21st Assembly District. Before the break, he introduced himself to you. He's a hardworking young lawyer dedicated to people, married, three kids from South Milwaukee. So, Nate, why you? Why should the voters vote for Nate?
Because I'm passionate, I care, looking at all the issues.
Now, that's what every politician says. What are the issues that you're going to go do? And, how can you carry the people's water?
Sure. So I think that we have a couple of issues, without the specifics necessarily, but getting into democracy itself. A lot of people, when I'm talking on the doors right now, are tired of divisive politics. So first stepping into this one, my approach just naturally, because it's who I am, was just to have as many conversations with people as possible, right? Get myself out there, get a feel for this. But quite honestly, that's what's resonating. And somewhere on the campaign trail so far, it just clicked for me. I'm like, okay, this is how we get past divisive politics. This is how we get back to getting stuff done, is actually having conversation. If I'm on a door and I have, somebody who might not have the same political beliefs as myself, I engage, I have a conversation. It's a human being, it's a learning opportunity. It's how we move past the divisiveness and where we are right now. And the more that people see that, the more that people feel that, the more that they know what they should expect from their government, then hopefully we can actually get that on all sides, right? When people are up, I say our representatives are up in Madison and not deliberating the issues, not putting things to a debate, not getting in there and actually having a discussion, my hope is that at least if we're setting an example of how things should be, that eventually that's what our citizenry will expect from that, as opposed to just dysfunction, which is, for me, that's what the goal is right now. So, sorry.
No. So what are the issues that people are say that need to be addressed, mm-hmm. and how are you going to address them?
Thank you. Yep. So in our district, some of the big issues, and I would say the biggest issues, are public funding for our schools. And if that's not landing or resonating with people, property taxes. It's dry, but we are not addressing those issues at the state level. This gets into the third prong of it, is local control. And the state government has taken a lot of local control away from our municipalities, our cities, our villages, to be able to address the issues at that level. So again, like I said, it's kitchen table issues. It's dry, but it's things that people do care passionately about. So public schools. And
so what do you say? What is your answer, and what does Nate bring to the table on the Democratic Party side of things, and why Nate on those issues?
So when we're talking about public services, historically we've taken for granted that, you know, the public services exist and they're there for us, right? So one, it becomes an issue of just educating the people and making sure that we're properly funding. So I get a lot of pushback when I say, okay, properly funding. That obviously means raising taxes, right? Well, the issue there then is we have more money going out of our district than we do coming back in. And that's part of the local control piece of it. But specifically, Jesse Rodriguez, who is the incumbent in the 21st, she's been in there for 9 years. She's elevated to the Joint Finance Committee, has taken votes that have hurt our district. Get somebody in there that can actually take votes that help our district, fund our schools, and those pieces. And just giving you an idea, on the Joint Finance, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say, give us one vote that really hurt.
Well, this last time around, not raising the revenue limits for schools. Our schools desperately need, at least equitably and fairly, they need to be tied to CPI. Without that, we're running the risk of losing teachers. We are losing teachers. And we're just having to make do with what we have, and less and less and less. And these public services and education is diminishing. Risk factors are popping up. We can't address, special needs, mental health issues, because everything is just being spread so thin. The big concern that I have is not where we are now, but where we're going to be in 5, 10, 15 years' time. What are our public school systems going to be looking like? We all benefit from public schools, all of us, with the future workforce, but unless we're actually adequately funding that. So a lot of the population get that, or at least see it through my lens, but a lot don't, right? So you're asking about, okay, how can Nate help? If we can change the makeup of the legislature so that we actually have Evers' budget come through and properly fund those pieces. And it's not like we're raising property tax or raising taxes that don't already exist. The Joint Finance Committee right now, or at least the state legislature, is sitting on $5.5 billion in excess funds and rainy day funds that, our legislatures, our leadership, decided not to fund our schools, not fund our public services.
And we should be very clear. Our current Republican leadership is locked up the money and is not letting it out.
They're sitting on it. Yes, the Republicans are. They're sitting on it, and they're going to be using it to buy votes by doing property tax voucher system, that kind of stuff. It's going to go toward property tax relief, and they're going to come out looking like saints when they were sitting on those funds that should have went to our public services to begin with. But yes.
How is that tied? I checked out your webpage. You talk about labor rights and civil rights and reproductive rights. You mentioned this. Mm-hmm. How does that play in then on these bread and butter issues? Right?
Right. Right. And so at some point I started talking about our freedoms. You talk about rights, I'll talk about freedoms. I think they're part and parcel, but at least letting people know that, hey, this is what we're talking about. As an American, you have freedoms. I don't want the other side to own that issue. Reproductive rights, your right to collectively bargain. Those are freedoms that we all should share. And the Walker, I know Walker's not in office anymore, but there's a legacy there. There's a shadow there that has been cast and we're experiencing now. So Jesse Rodriguez is same as Voss, same as Walker. And it's all about just limiting our freedoms, limiting our rights.
You got 10 seconds to wrap up.
Okay.
What's your message?
My message is, I'm an independent outsider, first time running for office. I need your help. I'm in there in the fight. This is my activism. Show your activism by supporting our campaign, Neighbors for Nate. Again, it's neighborsfornate.com. Check it out. Support us however you possibly can.
Folks, this is Attorney Mark Thompson. You just heard from Nate Jarowski, the future of our state, future of democracy. Thank you so much, Nate. We'll be back on the other side. This is the Paul Revere Show, folks. We'll be back. Good. Hello, folks. This is Attorney Mark Thompson. This is the Paul Revere Show. We are here every Monday night from 7 to 8. This is WAUK 540 AM 101 or 92.7 FM. Again, I had Nate Jarowski on in the first half, and I hope you folks enjoyed listening to him. He's an ambitious, hardworking servant of the people. We hope he gets elected. If he does enough doors, he will. And I have a special guest the second half. A couple decades ago, Pedro Colon was the first Latino elected, I should say Puerto Rican, elected to the assembly in Wisconsin history. He eventually was in joint finance. He is currently the presiding judge of Milwaukee County, Judge Pedro Colon. Good evening.
Good evening. It's great to be here.
So I invited my good friend, dear friend, old friend, to talk about democracy in the state from the view of the bench. We got three branches of government. We have the Assembly and Senate. We have the executive, and we have the judicial branch, and we really don't spend a lot of time, or I haven't, talking about the importance of the judiciary and how it impacts democracy. And I wanted some political insight on where we're at. So where are we at in Wisconsin? Here it is, 2022, Judge Colon.
Well, thank you, Mark, for inviting me to your show, number one. Number two, I want to start at the beginning, and the beginning is that Waukesha, that is the city from where we're talking, was actually the largest Latino community in the state, and actually elected one of the first Latino judges, Judge Ness Flores, who continues to live in this community and be very active. So I just want
hello out there, Judge Flores.
And so it's great to be in his home and really the historical seat of the Latino community in the state, although Milwaukee obviously surpassed it in population. But we're here to talk about the Supreme Court. Let's talk about the Supreme Court.
So what is it about the state of the Supreme Court that people should be paying attention to?
Well, the Supreme Court, in some ways it gets complicated, but it's very simple. It is the only independent branch of government. That is, we just had a young man talk about getting into the assembly. The assembly and the legislature is composed of the Senate and the assembly, and they control the budget of everything together with the governor. The governor has all of his secretaries in the domain of all the major interests for citizens, and ultimately who regulates most of the things that we do is the Supreme Court. And so we go to the Supreme Court for basic reasons. One is to seek justice, and two, to make sure that our laws are complied with in a way in which all people are represented and all people have an understanding about what justice is. So it is a hugely important branch of government. I know it gets lost sometime in April. And I always think about these issues. I think that's now becoming very apparent when the United States Supreme Court overruled Roe versus Wade, when we continually see our own Supreme Court entangled in what are really essentially administrative matters having to do with elections and how those get decided. I think we went through an experience in the pandemic when the governor declared an emergency. And what is an emergency and what is the prerogative of elected government? That is the governor's office, the assembly, and the Senate. What is their prerogative about how to regulate our democracy? And that can only be regulated in the Supreme Court. And that can only be regulated in the Supreme Court when you have independent judges.
So how do you see those issues looking back up to this point? What are the major decisions that you see that were decided by the Supreme Court that really tee up, or a couple of issues that tee up why this next April election is so important?
Well, I think one of the most, there's a few. One of the most telling was whether drop boxes were available for the youth and communities to actually gather votes.
I was right. I was a defendant in that case.
In my official capacity.
Oh, that's correct.
So you know that case very clearly. And let me just say, I'm bound to abide by the Supreme Court rulings as a circuit court judge. I'm also bound to see what the broader perspective could yield in a different Supreme Court. So I don't want, to say that those decisions are wrong in that. They are decided by a majority of the Supreme Court.
They are the current law.
They are the current law.
I said that during the election commission meeting.
Yes.
Because they said this is the law and this is the law.
And that's where we go to have the law declared is the Supreme Court. It is the last stop, whether it's the United States Supreme Court or the Supreme Court of Wisconsin.
Right.
And I've there's been significant decisions, one having to do, and I don't want to talk particularly about them, but the drop box issue, how people vote, I think it was alluded to as to what you're required to show before you vote, and ultimately how we decide that the districts are composed of communities and what factors do we use to do that to better align our population with a representative democracy. All those issues have run very recently through the Supreme Court.
Right. We had the decision from the Supreme Court that took the governor's maps that included seven minority districts down to five. So we have a very active court that's very active politically. And I see it this way. We had an election, and I want to bring this one up because we had Judge Hagedorn vote with three people, and said, "Look at Donald Trump. Your complaints about the election came way too late. I am not going to ignore the people's votes and disenfranchise voters and take the election away." And we've had Justice Hagedorn in that sort of middle role. And he's a historic conservative. So what is this, you know, this, because a lot of times the discussions on the Supreme Court have been this conservative view.
And yeah.
It doesn't seem to me that just in that it's, the game has sort of changed.
Well, I think that's a great segue. So here you have Hagedorn, Justice Hagedorn, who just won an election and is unabashedly conservative. He's conservative substantive, what I call a substantive conservative. That is a conservative who's willing to make calls based on a prism of conservatism, but ultimately making the right call as he sees it. And that's what he saw in both of the cases regarding gerrymandering or how the districts are composed, and number two about how we use drop boxes for votes. And so then we go along, and I imagine his existence was very difficult. And it came out, typically we have talk show hosts, and we have legislators, and we have you know, talking heads and angry talk show hosts who declare that somehow Hagedorn has offended democracy to a great degree, to the extent that he should be deposed of his commission to be duly elected judge, justice of the Wisconsin Supreme Court. So,
I mean, we have a justice who was actually threatened,
just
for voting and issuing a ruling the way he saw it conservatively.
No, right? That may not be appropriate, but that's new, and that's the way the world functions. What concerns me is we have Judge Janet Protasiewicz. She's running for the Supreme Court. She announces around the last week of May here in late spring, and immediately former Justice Kelly declares Hagedorn unreliable, deeply unreliable, because he took at that time one vote that was not what the conservative collective would have
or mandated, required.
Well, what the conservative collective decided that the law was. And I have respect for every justice because they are duly elected, as I do for all elected officials. But when you have somebody who's previously elected statewide and uses that kind of language, then I think we're overstepping and we're losing our civility to the extent that we are all judges. Now, they are the highest judges. I am a circuit court judge, but we all have to use a language. And when you have Justice Kelly declaring that Hagedorn does not ever belong or is not reliable, I don't think that's, first of all, I don't think it's appropriate. I don't think it's appropriate. It's on the margins of our ethical standards as professionals, professional attorneys, which and everybody judges. In this room is. And so, one, and two, I think it brings a debate which I don't think yields the kind of credibility that the Supreme Court ought to have. It should be independent. Whether you're conservative, whether you're progressive, liberal, whatever label you want to put on anybody, it should be independent, and it should look at the prism of justice. And I think that gets lost, and Hagedorn hasn't lost that prism, whether you agree with him or not. I'm not suggesting that others have. But when Janet Protasiewicz announces, and that's the first reaction, and then that becomes an interesting statement in that they expect Justice Kelly to then announce for Supreme Court, and they are going to decide this by July. Well, it's Monday, August 22nd, and no one other than Janet Protasiewicz and
Everett Mitchell
in Madison has announced, both of which are progressives. Now, where is the conservative? We were waiting for, and this is the interesting thing about this race. It's been now a whole summer, 90 days, and we're proceeding into the November elections, and there's still no candidate announced. I don't know. I don't want to speculate as to why they don't have a candidate. I would venture to guess that Justice Kelly is no longer interested because he didn't do it in July.
And do you think he's not interested, or do you think he is being pushed aside?
Well,
or is that what we're wondering about?
Look, I don't want to say that he was pushed aside. He has done his math. Everybody does their math when they run for office, and it doesn't add up. And it doesn't add up either because he's not being supported or because he realizes that I think the overwhelming theme of this Supreme Court race will be the ability of women to retain the right to abortion or not. And I don't know that Justice Kelly is a good carrier of the message, either pro or against that. And so I think everybody has sort of declared what their math is and analyzed where they stand on the race. Ultimately, they haven't found a candidate. That's the ultimate truth. And the fact is, it may be that Janet Protasiewicz, with about 30 years as a prosecutor and actually being an independent judge is not someone that they can find anybody to run against.
Judge Pedro Colon, folks, presiding judge, Milwaukee County. This is attorney Mark Thompson. This is the Paul Revere Show. We're going to take a break. This is WAUK 540 AM 101 92.7 FM. The Paul Revere Show will be back for our final segment with Judge Pedro Colon.
Did I even say anything?
Welcome back, folks. This is attorney Mark Thompson. This is the Paul Revere Show. We are here 7 o'clock every Monday night, WAUK, 540 AM, 101 or 92.7 FM. I have the privilege and honor of having Judge Pedro Colon on tonight. We're just talking about the judiciary, the Supreme Court, and democracy, and we have November elections and we have an April election for that will tee up the next Supreme Court justice. So, you know, you've been a judge for how many years now?
12 years,
and you had served in the assembly for
12 years in September. Go ahead.
12 years in September as a judge, and then before that you were how many years in the assembly?
I was about over 10 years. I served 3 terms in the Joint Finance Committee.
So you have a lifetime perspective of the politics of Madison, and now 12 years through the vantage point of looking at the world as a judge. How do you see the state of politics in Wisconsin now compared to even like, you know, 20 years ago, or, you know, when you got elected? What has really changed in terms of the relationship between the court and Madison?
Well, a lot has changed. I mean, Citizens United changed the whole game as to how you fundraise, how elections are funded. That's the law of the land as we talk today.
Yeah, for real, right? When it said corporations that persons for voting, it's like, it's wide
which,
open.
Which is why it's really interesting this Janet Protasiewicz race has developed without a candidate, because the funds are there, presumptively there. They're always there
for a conservative candidate
who, as former Justice Kelly said, is reliable. That is not independent, but reliable. What we want, I think, is to be independent. And, you know,
now, I think that's really an important point, folks, to just pay attention to, because historically, if you're going to run for the Supreme Court, you had to start way before this, right?
Yeah.
And you had to announce.
And you have to disavow politics. I'm not suggesting that politics have not always been intertwined in the Supreme Court. They always have. We've had former senators hold Supreme Court justice spots throughout. But you had to tell the electorate, look, I am going to look at the state of politics through a different prism. That is the prisms of the tenets of justice, not through the partisan prism that I used to do it in.
Exactly. And you use this term reliable, right? It is that the presumption is that there is a bucket of dollars there on the right for just to give to the reliable candidate.
Yes.
And
those are not our words. Justice Kelly's words.
That's right.
And
you not reliable enough. And then the question is to who, right?
To whom and for what? And so when you have Justice Hagedorn, who stands up for the prism of justice in 2 decisions, I mean, frankly, maybe 3. Mm-hmm. He's very conservative, and he'll tell you that. And when you have a Supreme Court that, when he sort of doesn't side with that group on 3 decisions, and then he is, he's
he crossed the big money on the right.
Yes.
He did.
And that, I think, is not, that is different. So you asked me what's different?
That's right.
That's different. Because when we elected Supreme Court justices, whether it was Justice Shirley Abramson, whether it was Justice Prosser, whether it was Justice Wilcox, okay. We didn't expect these judges to agree with us every day. We didn't expect these justices to rubber stamp every single act of a political faction, in whether in the assembly or in the governor's office, independent of party. And so that's what we have different. We are now sending our Supreme Court in a path where all is decided by this factionalized political prism. Now, be that as it may, everybody has their politics, everybody has their labels, that's fine. But ultimately, that has changed and the money has changed. In fact, Janet Protasiewicz leads the fundraising at this point, and she showed the most amount of funds gathered. And I suspect that's probably a symptom of Roe versus Wade. She is pro-choice. She defends the right of a woman to have an abortion. And that is going to be defined by the Supreme Court. My point in saying all of this is that I never understand why people get so excited about every other race but the Supreme Court, especially on progressive circles. They just sit there and they don't participate. And these are essentially races in which we should be very active, especially now, given the state of affairs. Now,
I think that's really important to say, because we have had a Republican majority that has just ignored Governor Evers' appointments. Right.
Yes.
We have all sorts of folks that have been appointed to spots. And, you know, I've lived now in Wisconsin since 1984. Never before did an assembly or a Senate ignore a governor's appointees like this. Right.
So,
that's new. Right.
Yeah. So the Supreme Court should be the adult in the room.
Absolutely.
And should defend what is rational so that we can have stability and we can have participation by the most amount of citizens in every type of activity, and especially democracy. And so when you have a Supreme Court that is not willing to be the adult in the room,
and not to be an umpire.
Right? Exactly. A fair umpire. Like we expect at the Brewers game. When we watch that game, when we listen to it on the radio, we rely on fairness.
Right. You now, go to a Packers game, you don't get a Packers uniform as the ref.
Exactly. Right. Nor do you get the opponent's uniform.
That's it, right? We're supposed to have a Supreme Court that's independent, that's wearing an umpire's outfit, and not the far-right Republican outfit.
Well, I think you've just given me an idea. I think we should give the Supreme Court justices robes that are in striped black and white, just like the referees at the Packer games.
To remind us,
remind them that they are, in fact, umpires.
But they should be, right? And we're going to have you come back on another show, Judge Colon, because my time is almost up here tonight, folks. This is a Paul Revere show, but we're going to end this. Suggestion: talk to your legislatures. Have them pass a law that judges wear black and white striped outfits. We want a judiciary that's independent, and will fight for our Constitution to keep us free. Folks, this is Attorney Mark Thompson. We will be back next Monday night. This is the Paul Revere Show. Y'all take care. See you on the other side.